Chatham Baroque and Renaissance and Baroque are featuring a concert with Parker Ramsey, harp and harpsichord, and Arni Tanimoto playing the viola da gamba. The concert is titled In the Court of the King, Music of Bach and Marais. A second concert has been added on Friday, April 5th at the Teutonia Manor Chor, and Saturday, April 6th at Hicks Memorial Chapel at Pittsburgh Theological Seminary. Parker Ramsey plays harp and harpsichord, and I'd like to hear a little bit about the music the two of you will be playing.
Yes, so we've got a really wonderful program that we've come to, that we really put together because we really love the music. Arni and I really came to work together as a result of gigging in New York on the continuo scene, playing Sigurd bass together, and we found that we really liked the sound of our two instruments together, namely the Baroque harp and the viola da gamba. And we tried out some music by Maran Marais, a very, very famed composer in the court of Louis XIV, and actually quite a lot of subtlety with the music of Maran Marais came out that we hadn't previously found when accompanying it with a harpsichord. And it turns out in one of Marais' treatises, or one of his introductions, rather, to his music, he talks about how he prefers plucked instruments, things like the lute or the theorbo, or its cousin, the harp by proxy, although he doesn't mention the harp, as being more sensitive and being more amenable to accompanying viola da gamba. And the more we got searching, the more we found that actually the gamba and the harp were used a lot together in the 17th century in particular. The essayist Francis Bacon said that there was actually no finer sound than the sound of a viol and a harp playing together. So with the music of Marais, that's kind of our home turf as a duo, and then we sort of started thinking about what other music we could add with it. So we started adding in music that was going on elsewhere in the court of Louis XIV at the time. So I'll be playing some music by Robert de Vizé, who was a really wonderful lutenist. And his music was so popular for lute that other people used to transcribe it for things like violin and flute and accompaniment. So I'll be playing from a transcribed version. And then de Vizé studied with Francesco Corbetta, who was a very famed guitarist from Italy who worked for Louis XIV's brother and eventually ended up accompanying Charles II to England when he was restored as king in 1660. And Arni's going to play some music by Maran Marais' teacher, who is Saint-Colombe. Now, it's interesting, the program deals a lot with teacher and student relationships as music that took place and was written in courts for royalty in Europe also took place inside models of pedagogy. So we have Saint-Colombe and Marais as a teacher and student, and we also have Corbetta and de Vizé as teacher and student. And in the second half, we're moving on to the music of Johann Sebastian Bach with the harpsichord, because he specifies the music should be played with the harpsichord, and of his student, who is a gambist, Carl Friedrich Abel. Now, Bach was heavily influenced by French repertoire and even had music by Maran Marais in his library. There's even some transcriptions for the harpsichord of Marais' music, I think from his opera Acción. It's in a collection that was floating around both Bach and his brothers early in his life. And, of course, we have things like the French suites, which were given the name the French suites posthumously by one of Bach's students, but they really showcase a lot of the same stylistic features that you see in music from the French courts. And then Carl Friedrich Abel has this really wonderful sensuous music that's highly improvisatory and harkens back to some extremely, extremely virtuosic practices from a century before in France. So while the music covers almost a century of historical territory, there is a unifying thread that goes through it, and we're really excited to share it.
We're looking forward to hearing this music here in Pittsburgh. You play the modern harp and also the Baroque harp. Can you explain some of the differences between the two instruments?
Yeah, so the modern harp is an instrument that was developed really in the 1820s. It has one row of strings and has a pedaling system. So it's got seven pedals, one for each white note of the keyboard. And, it's what, all of our major orchestral repertoire is written for and our modern chamber repertoire, and really came to maturity in the 20th century. The Baroque harp or the one I'll be playing in Pittsburgh, is modeled on instruments from really Italy in the 16th and 17th centuries. Now, this has no pedaling system. It has three rows of strings. It has anywhere between 80 and 92, 93 strings, depending on the model that you have, and whereby the two outer rows look like the white notes of the keyboard, and there's a middle row of strings, which you have to dot into in order to grab the black notes or grab the accidentals in order to modulate to new keys and add some color. Now, the sound quality is very, very different. The modern harp has developed to sound more and more like the piano and compete with orchestral instruments and to be extremely sonorous, especially at the top of the instrument. A Baroque harp is the opposite. It's a continual instrument, so it's really actually very, very bass-heavy. It has very, very long strings at the bottom of the harp and really is designed to blend with its cousin, the theorbo, or the sort of the larger lute that you see in Italy in the 17th century, and also in France, because there's so much exchange between France and Italy at the time. So the harp is an interesting cousin of the lute, and sort of is one that's uniquely suited to playing very, very expressively. It's not the loudest instrument in the world, but because it has so many strings, the phenomenon of sympathetic vibration is really, really wonderful. So it's a very, very rich and very, very deep color without being overwhelming when playing with singers and playing with string players.
Parker, I was looking at your website, and you have a very well-regarded recording of the Bach Goldberg Variations. And is this done on modern harp?
True, which I did on modern harp. It's frankly too chromatic and too virtuosic to do on a Baroque harp.
I would think this would be a huge challenge transcribing this piece from harpsichord to harp.
It is. I mean, I spent a long time on it. I'm not the only one who's done it. There are a couple other wonderful recordings. Catherine Finch did a wonderful recording for Deutsche Grammophone, and also Sylvain Blassel. And they've got completely different approaches. It was very difficult in a certain sense, yes, but in some ways it was very easy because there are many things I found that were more expressive and more naturally at home on the harp than they were on the harpsichord. There's quite a lot in the Goldbergs that's in a very, well, frankly, very French Baroque and very kind of expressive and quiet style. And having the ability to have gut strings and play with pressure a bit is actually really lovely. I mean, Bach himself actually had harpsichords that were strung in gut strings, something called a Lautenwerk. There's a wonderful harpsichordist in New York named Gwendolyn Toth who actually recorded the Goldbergs on such an instrument. And it's like hearing the Goldbergs on a sort of an enormous computer-like lute machine. There are all sorts of experiments one can do with the Goldbergs, but fundamentally it was one that was actually very, very satisfying, though challenging, and it was a delight to be able to record when I did it at King's College, Cambridge.
Was it the harp that piqued your interest when you were younger?
That's a difficult one to answer because my mother is a professional harpist and a very well-regarded pedagogue, particularly of prep students. So I'd actually grown up with a harp my entire life and have continued to study privately through my undergraduate and my graduate studies in history and then historical performance, both in England and then here in the States. And then eventually I found that the projects I was interested in doing with historical performance and contemporary music were actually more well-suited to maybe pursuing a career at the harp bench. And because I'd been around the instrument my whole life, there was something that was still very, very natural about the instrument for me. Had always been there in my life, and so I kind of came to terms with it relatively late. But, you know, I had harp teachers who always encouraged me to go do other things first before coming back to it. I had this wonderful opportunity to study at Cambridge University, for instance, with a scholarship, and whereby I could be a full-time organist with King's College Choir and study political history. And when I got the scholarship, I talked to my harp teacher at the time, It was a professor of the Royal Academy of Music, and I said, well, I'm not sure I should take this. I'm not sure what I'm going to do about the harp. And she was adamant. She's like, you have to do this. If you don't do this, I will never speak to you again. She was, and similarly, when I had these opportunities to go study historical performance at Oberlin, mentors and, friendly faces in the harp world said, keep going and doing other things and, see if you can bring them back to the harp. And so that's what I did. And so when I came back to the harp, I felt confident that I had a myriad of other musical experiences that I could sort of augment, my creative database when approaching the instrument. So it's been an interesting journey. And in the last decade or so, I've made the transition from, having an organ-centered career to really being a full-time harpist, whereby keyboard instruments supplement the harp rather than the other way around. I mean, I did a master's degree in both harpsichord and organ before I went to Juilliard, actually, and I did the Goldbergs on harpsichord as my master's recital the week before I graduated. So I had done it on a keyboard instrument before taking to the harp some years later. I enjoy the harpsichord very much, but I'm by no means a full-time touring harpsichordist, nor do I want to be.
You do have another CD, which is titled The Street. Tell me a little bit about that.
So that was a work that was commissioned by King's College, Cambridge. It's really interesting how that came about. The Goldbergs had a good deal of success when it was released, and King's College, Cambridge, my alma mater, has a record label who recorded it and released it, and they asked about another album. But they wanted a piece of contemporary music, and so we got talking about what that would look like, because King's College Cambridge is a religious foundation, has a world-famous choir, and so we somehow needed a piece of solo harp music that was sacred in nature and somehow also incorporated the choir. And so I ended up calling upon two artists who have multiple passports in sacred music and new music, and that's Nico Muley and Alice Goodman. Nico Muley is, has a heavy, heavy hand in Anglican church music, as well as all the projects he does in non-classical music and orchestral music and opera and chamber music and literally everything under the sun, because he's one of the most brilliant and diverse musicians on the planet. And then Alice Goodman, she's a wonderful poet and librettist, and whose texts really captivated me as a teenager, especially with Nixon in China, and she herself is an Anglican priest. So the work that sprang up was a setting of the Stations of the Cross. So it's 14 movements for harp solo, Gregorian chant, and narration. And it's about 80 minutes in length, it's turned into a really interesting project. It's about to be choreographed by Mark Morris Dance Group, in Berkeley, California, and I think we'll have some more performances with them next year. I'm talking to you from Albuquerque right now, where I'll be playing it tomorrow.
It seems like a perfect concert piece for Holy Week in the Catholic Church.
Indeed. It was premiered on Holy Saturday at King's College, Cambridge, which is an interesting one because Alice and Nico were very, very clever about how they created the piece, because they created a piece about Good Friday, but written from the perspective after everything has happened. So it's the act of walking the Stations of the Cross and remembering everything after it's all happened, to make it appropriate for that sort of sedition territory between Good Friday and Easter Sunday. But it can be done on Good Friday, so that's what I'll be doing here in Albuquerque. But it's a really moving and very, very prescient work, and I'm very, very lucky to have been part of it.
Well, I hope at some point you can come back and play this piece here in Pittsburgh. It sounds really amazing. We are so excited to have you and Arnie Tonimoto as part of the Chatham Baroque and Renaissance and Baroque Concert Series. It's exciting because an additional concert has been added on Friday. Parker Ramsey plays the harp and harpsichord, and Arnie Tonimoto plays the viola da gamba. It's music from the courts of 17th and 18th century Europe, showing the world in which viol virtuoso and composer Marin Marais lived and his influence on the music of Johann Sebastian Bach. Parker, is there anything else you'd like to tell our audience?
No, not really. I mean, if people want to know more, they should buy a ticket and turn out. You know what I mean? Or rather, they can verify what I've told them. How about that?
And, of course, they can buy tickets by going to chathambaroque.org. Parker, thank you so much for sharing your insights with us. It is greatly appreciated.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.